Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast, Steph Seelan, stuffing your face with cake.
I'm eating a cake because it's John's birthday.
It is our guru editor, producer, friend's birthday, John Dan.
Pops, and it's one of those good ones, you know, that's just Victoria sponge with jam and just that nice icing that lots of people don't like, but I do.
You know, I was thinking whenever we say pogs, I always feel we should explain what that is, because there are, you know, we hope every week there's
people
new
on
people
the ground
coming to the podcast. Mm. And when we first started, we referred to people on the ground, I think you did, as like, you know, normal people.
I am the most normal of us.
So that's right. When we say pogs, we're talking about real people, keeping it real on the ground, just to explain.
Yeah.
I'm also, that was the voice of Stephanie Seelan, who's stuffing her face with cake.
It's delicious.
Cara Biro is also here, as ever.
Hello.
Who's very, very pleasantly looking at her cake and not
so
actually eating it.
I'm desperate to put it in my
mouth. You can put it in your mouth while I now explain what the hell we're talking about in the podcast.
Good.
This week, we shall be reviewing in depth The Tunnel : Vengeance, the third and final series of Sky's adaptation of The Bridge.
I didn't know it was the final series. It's definitely the final series.
Yes, it's definitely the final series.
Oh,
Steph,
no.
I'm not lying. I'm not making it up. It's the final series. It's going to arrive on Sky Atlantic and Now TV in full next Thursday, the 14th of December. We're also going to be reviewing Bancroft, which, funnily enough, was a school near where I lived in Ilford in Essex. Yeah, I went to Ilford County High School, and Bancroft was like the big posh school that if you didn't get into Ilford County High, passing the 11 plus, as I did, you'd end up going to Bancroft probably. But it's also the title of a new crime drama series.
That's a great fact about you, boys.
On ITV, starting next Monday, and it's running over four nights consecutively. Steph,
it's
did you know
running
that?
Over four
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Because it's just too much Christmas stuff.
Actually, I do know exactly why. I'll explain later. Yeah, but it is, isn't it? And finally, an intriguing one-off feature-length documentary on the Netflix right now as we speak. It's already there, called Voyeur, which is an extraordinary tale in so many ways. But we'll get to that later. First of all, we do like to have a look through what we've been watching, listening to, reading this week. You can say what the hell we like. It's a freewheeling early segment of the podcast. Kay sipping tea, bit of cake. I'm wondering which of you is going to go first. You've digested your cake.
That. I literally inhaled that.
You look
that
redder.
Cake.
You did inhale it.
Wow.
Steph, what the hell have you been watching and listening to?
Well, I read a book.
Oh my God, this is like the second time in as many weeks.
I know.
I didn't want to woo because I think that's really patronising, but then I could tell that you wanted a woo.
No, I did want to woo.
Okay, woo!
So I read a book, okay, but it's not like, no, it's not the same as when I read Lincoln in the Bardo, which is, yeah, the Man Booker Prize winner. This week, actually, and it only took me like 2 days, I have read Anna Faris, Unqualified. Now, sorry, Anna Faris. You pronounce it Anna.
What?
Okay? Yeah, you do. Anna.
Really?
Why?
Because if you listen to her podcast, Unqualified Podcast, which is amazing, which I do, she explains in detail that her parents misspelt it, but that's how you pronounce it, Anna. Her name is Anna Faris. If you don't know who she is, she was married, or is still married, legally, to Chris Pratt.
Legally,
she's still married. Man, they're not divorced yet. To Chris Pratt, fabulous actor, Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, hunk. Jurassic World, et cetera, et cetera.
Dream couple.
Yeah. Oh, well, they were a dream couple. However, rather awkwardly, they split up just as this book was about to come out,
dear.
And he wrote the foreword.
Oh, dear.
I know.
How messy.
That's sad.
It is messy.
But they're very mature and they're still friends,
aren't
they?
Well, they are. They are very mature and they are still friends. And actually what I think has happened, which I can tell you has definitely happened, is that this foreword's been slightly rewritten to acknowledge that they've parted ways.
Oh.
Because, okay, now listen to this. This is what he promises. I can promise you it will be a great and interesting read, a face-first dive into the mind and person that I spent one amazing decade with and will, for the rest of my life, amicably co-parent a human. That's
amicably
what he says.
Amicably co-parent a human.
I know. I think that's a diss. It doesn't sound very nice. Anyway, at the end of this book, she says how much she loves him. So it's a bit awkward, but... Right, so Anna Faris, as I said, she does a podcast called Unqualified. It's got about 4 million listeners. So
on a par with us?
Less than us, but
what?
You keep going and you might get as many as us. It's really good. It's all about
When I write the book about this podcast, are you going to write the foreword, whether we're co-parenting anyone or not?
I will. Yeah. I will say.
John.
We're amicably co-parenting Kay and John.
John, and probably your husband as
well. Yeah, exactly. And Liam.
Liam B. George.
But her podcast is all about relationships, and they get people phoning in, they give advice, and she always has one of her celebrity friends on there.
But this book, what's it about and is it
this
good?
This is about sex, relationship. It's about her and her life in Hollywood, her relationships, and she's giving you advice throughout.
So it's like the written podcast.
It's absolutely like the written podcast, but the absolute best chapter of this is a chapter on how to deal with jealousy. And it's all about how she dealt with Jennifer Lawrence and Chris and everything that happened.
Oh, because they filmed that not very good film, Passengers.
That terrible, terrible film.
Not terrible, just...
Boyd, that film is terrible.
Is it 3-star?
Steph.
No, it's 2.
It's not that bad.
Boyd, I disagree with you.
I feel like you're consciously uncoupling right now.
Well, I feel when Steph does the names your name at the beginning and looks, gives you that stern look, you know she means it seriously.
It's really bad.
It's not that bad.
Okay, anyway, well, there's no
we'll
way of like,
disagree.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, this book
that's
is really
fascinating.
Good. And
I'm fascinated.
It's really interesting. You'll be very interested. She's so candid. And she's just a normal girl.
Aww.
And of course, when she met Chris Pratt, she was much more famous. She did House Bunny and What's Your Number, if you remember those films of hers. And
House
Bunny,
was that a major film?
Excuse me, Boyd. Oh, House Bunny was a fantastic
Boyd,
film.
Steph, was House Bunny a major film?
Yes, it was.
Was it better than Passengers?
Yes, it totally was. House Bunny's a great film.
Is anything else you'd like to mention in your Steph?
Yes, I would. I would like to mention that reluctantly I took your advice and started watching Sinner, although I don't want to give
the
you any
Sinner.
Praise.
Oh.
The Sinner.
On the Netflix.
Jessica Biel on
like
the
it?
Netflix. I can confirm that she was slicing a pear before she
now
killed
Boyd,
the guy.
You told us it was an apple.
Oh, I said it was either an apple or an orange. I never take notes, as I've explained. I never take notes when I'm watching things.
No,
much to my
didn't take notes.
Discredit.
When you watched Passengers because it was terrible.
No, I didn't.
Think you need to offer an apologia to
it's
Jessica
an apologia
Biel.
To yeah. not. To, I mean, I think Biel would care so much as the
I
listeners.
I think she would. It means you watched attentively.
Yeah,
now.
But yeah, she does stab using the implement she peels the pear. With.
It's yes, a knife and it's a pear.
It's a knife, yeah.
And that happens in the first kind of...
More importantly, did you like the series?
Absolutely brilliant. Oh, and good. I, as you said,
I
Jessica
love it
Biel...
I absolutely hated
no,
it.
No, it's really good. And Jessica Biel does cry all the way...
She does, doesn't she?
But also, you didn't tell me Thingy from Girls was in it. I've forgotten his name. The guy who plays...
Oh, yeah, Thingy
yeah.
from Girls. Yeah,
he
yeah,
plays
yeah.
the husband.
Yes,
oh,
yes
we'll have
indeed.
To look that up.
Yes, I forgot that.
He's
yeah.
really good,
he's good
in it.
Because
I was...
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people are in series and then you never see them again. But he's actually really good. Yeah. Thoroughly recommend it. It's definitely one where you want to just keep. Yeah,
addictive.
it's a binger.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. You, do you know what, Boyd? You were right.
We disagree on Passengers.
Yeah, Passengers.
Brown Bunny or whatever it was. What was it?
Brown Bunny. House Bunny.
House Bunny. Oh yeah, Brown Bunny was the perverse film with that dude.
Yeah, I don't think I like the sound of Brown Bunny.
Brown Bunny.
Yeah, there was a film as well.
Don't you think rabbits should be called Runny Babbits instead of Bunny Rabbits? Just as an aside.
Oh my God! I mean. Just the random...
No, but don't you think? Bunny rabbits, but they really should be called runny babbits because that's what they do.
Yeah,
anyway,
I mean,
just think on it, is all I'm saying.
Brown Bunny starred Vincent Gallo and Chloe Sevigny, and it's got a very famously perverse scene in it.
What happens
Does
in
it? Does it involve poo?
I don't... Oh, not that perverse. No.
Well,
oh,
but she's saying it's brown bunny.
It's disgrace.
Oh, yeah, I'm the one who's wrong in this.
No, there's a scene of sexual activity that is kind of done for real, like you see the full-on thing that Vincent Gallo essentially was doing with Chloe Sevigny.
Oh, don't watch that.
No, I don't want to say
but
it.
But do watch The Sinner. Don't say it.
That's
keep
not
it
great
anyway.
Men from The Unmissables.
Can
don't
I just,
start
can I just mention one thing, though? Have you all been watching Peaky Blinders?
Yes.
Oh,
brilliant, yeah. Great.
Helen McCrory's character's just turned on Tommy Shelby. Oh my God, it's
She's
just
so
tense.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's
yeah,
what
it
I've
is
been watching.
Phenomenal, yeah. Good point, well made. Ooh. Kay.
Hello. First up, just got a little confession to make.
Uh-oh.
I'm woefully underprepared today because I've been going through a lot of stress.
Why are you so stressed?
Because we've got the Christmas issue, Steph, and you know, it involves
a lot
of...
We've got the Christmas issue, Kay.
Yes, but...
Ooh.
Oh my God.
Hold on a minute. Actually, sorry,
Deep
can
breath.
I just say
oh
that
God.
Anna Faris's book is $16.99, published by HarperCollins. Sorry.
Oh, nice, yeah. Kay, I apologise. Yes,
it's been a bit stressful.
Stress.
We've
I'm
been
trying to just, you know,
yeah, making
light,
it light. I
make
get
it. Light
it.
Of it, yeah.
I get that. It's been a bit stressful. A lot of last minute fallouts and stuff like that. I'm just trying to make the issue as great as it can be. So I haven't had a lot of time to watch as much stuff, or in fact,
but
to
you've
watch.
Watched all the stuff.
No,
well, this is a thing.
Hold on. What have you not watched? Come on, confess. Now, this is confession to me as well. I haven't
yeah,
heard of it. This is the first I've heard of it.
I know. I wanted to catch you on the hop, hoping that you'd be...
Well,
what,
come on.
Angry
which
with
of...
Me?
Let's should we guess? Let's
Bancroft. Turn this
to, Bancroft, Voyeur, or The Tunnel Vengeance? I'm going to go
tunnel.
For... No, I'm going for The Tunnel.
It was The Tunnel.
Oh.
Why? I tell you why, Steph, because I had to... interview Robbie Williams. Oh. And before that, I had to read his 500.
If I didn't do things, the amount of times I've had to interview Robbie Williams, I'd never get anything done, Kay. It's not an excuse.
Listen, it was a joyful experience, but I had to read his 500-page book, which is brilliant, Reveal, by Chris Heath beforehand.
Which I mentioned moons ago in this section of the podcast. Yeah,
you didn't read the full thing.
Yeah, that's the truth.
You didn't. And you admitted that in the podcast.
I read enough of it to mention, to recommend it fully.
Well,
anyway,
why didn't you
on.
Just give Kay the notes? Yeah. Anyway.
So I've read all 500 pages. I had to do that. And then I had to find a Christmas Heat interview. But anyway, I don't want any violins. I'm just trying to explain that, sir, I haven't done my homework. One thing I did watch.
Only one?
No, extra thing.
Oh, so but in this time you could have watched The Tunnel. So you did watch something extra. Is that what you're saying?
I think in the time pre-stress, pre-Robbie Williams, etc.
Right.
Judi Dench, My Passion for Trees.
Should we just warn the listeners? This is a preview of,
this is a pre-Christmas preview, Kay. Yeah,
I'm just saying, don't spoil it.
I don't think it's going to be a massive spoiler unless they completely just massacre a woodland.
Yeah, what is
this?
What's
this? Oh, yeah, all the trees. They got chopped
down. Dentrophiles are going to be very excited about this.
Is that what they're called?
I am. I'm a dentrophile.
You made that up?
Made it up. Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
Tell us more.
I love Judi Dench. So it's Wednesday, 20th of December. It's coming out. I'm not going to ruin it, but I think it's safe to say this programme involves Judi Dench and trees. It's her look at it. She has a woodland in her Surrey home, which she nurtured with Michael Williams, her late husband. And she's always been fascinated and had deep connection.
Romance.
Yeah, fine romance. She's always had a deep connection with trees and she wanted to learn more about
She's always had a deep connection with trees.
Yeah, so she like plants trees. When she loses someone in her life...
I just think it's an odd thing.
Really? Do you hate trees?
I love trees, but I wouldn't ever go, that oak tree. Me and that oak tree, we're so tight.
You're going to feel bad now, because every time she loses someone in her life...
Dissing the dench.
It's a dench. And the dead, because every time someone she loses someone, she plants a tree.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Every week in this podcast that we do...
You get revealed as an arsehole.
I get revealed as an absolute arsehole. Every week. Just say I'm an arsehole.
And it's bold and brave because no one disses the dench, do they?
I wasn't dissing the dench. I just said that I think it's strange to have a deep connection with trees. Are those her own words?
To be fair to you, I do think, what's it called again?
A Passion for Trees.
Judi Dench's Passion for Trees, or A Passion for Trees with Judi Dench.
Judi Dench colon.
Originally, this programme was called Judi Dench on Trees, which I think would have been up there with Monkey Tennis.
Oh, do you know what would be even better than that? Judi Dench out of her tree.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, it is one of the great commissions of our time, based, I think, purely on the title. I think when Judi Dench's agent phoned the BBC and said, look, Dench loves trees, right? And she also did a documentary about it. They went, whatever.
Whatever.
As long as we can call it something funny about Judi Dench and trees.
What's her favourite tree? Does that get revealed or no? Or is it?
This is not a spoiler, Steph. Okay. I'm not going to reveal that to you.
It sounds but I'm sure it's lovely.
No, it genuinely is really, really good. And it's fascinating. I want to give you facts. So a beech tree, right, when it's under attack from roe deer... Don't laugh.
When it's under attack from what?
Deer. Roe deer.
Okay. Yeah. Rogue deer.
No, deer. Let's just say deer.
Okay.
Deer attack trees.
Because they can attack the bark and stuff like that.
Now that is a really amazing document. When deer attack trees would be amazing.
Note it down.
Judi Dench, when deer attack.
That's that. It's like that Nicole Kidman film. What's that called?
Deer. Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then it killed a tree.
Sequel.
There's no deer in that though. This would have to have deer attacking things.
Yeah. True.
Anyway, when the deer attack the beech trees, it releases like tannin in its leaves, which makes it then bitter, and then the deer stop eating it. Don't you think that's amazing?
What's
that the tree
tannin?
Is able.
Am I stupid? What is that?
I mean, I think that's tannin. A separate question we should deal with later. Yeah. Anyway, so that's what I've been watching.
Yeah.
I've also been reading that Robbie Williams book. And also, before we carry on, I just want to give a little shout out to some pogs.
Oh.
Yes.
Go for it.
Okie dokie.
In our mission to
have people been being kind?
Yeah. I mean, I choose not to read the ones that are unkind. There are very few of those, to be honest.
We know who you are, though.
Cedar Master. That sounds threatening. It's not a threat, Pogs. Pogs, say what you want and I will defend you. Even if you say something bad, I will stop Steph from hunting you down.
No, you won't.
Cedar Master, he said, not just a 5-star podcast, but 5 stars every week, which is very nice.
Oh.
Miffed in London, not miffed with us, because she said, great conviviality between us three. That's nice.
Good word.
And the best named, Chicken 150594.
Oh, yeah. What was his pin number?
He wrote a bit of a thesis on it, so I won't read that all out, but he said it's the one podcast every week that gets his priority.
Does it?
Yeah, it's his priority every week.
Beautiful. Oh, you are our priority.
Chicken 15903 4547.
Please do write back and tell us the origin of that name. I would like to know.
Might be as like an eye number or something.
Yeah.
Oh, or indeed, if you like trees, an eye number.
That's all right.
What have I been watching? You may be wondering.
Oh, forget about you. No one thought that.
No one thought it. Again, it's stuff that I haven't got time now because we're in the Christmas rush. It's the busiest time of the year.
Thank you.
Double issue to do. Got another issue to do. I've got to go to
it's
New York
stressful.
Next week. Yeah, it's very, very stressful.
Why are you going to New York next
going
week?
Going to New York for my birthday.
For your upcoming birthday.
How many candles on the cake, Boyd? We've got John Dan's cake here. How many candles on yours?
30, at least.
30? Yeah. Interesting.
Probably
fire hazard.
20 more, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Whoa.
But it's an escape to New York, yeah, for my birthday. So I've got to get everything done. And but I haven't been to screenings of new stuff. Kiri, I went to this morning, is the new thing from Jack Thorne, who wrote, I mean, he's like one of the most prolific writers now in the global universe. But
in the global
in the
universe.
Global universe. As opposed to, no, but he wrote that child abuse drama with Robbie...
Coltrane. Yeah. Oh, yeah, what was that?
Which
was
brilliant.
Channel 4 one.
Oh, yeah, the Channel 4 one. What's it called again?
National Treasure.
Thanks, John Dan.
National Treasure was so good. When was that? Was that last year?
2 years ago, that was.
Oh,
yeah,
2 years.
Beautiful last. This is a new four-parter. And in a similar way to National Treasure, which, and this is all embargoed, so I'm not, but this has all been announced already, so I can't talk about it in detail.
Is it going to be a spoiler like Judy Dench?
No, this is the premise. So the premise is, so you know, in National Treasure, he took the very topical idea of child sex abuse and the celebrity getting involved in it. Did
it was a bit Jimmy Savile-esque,
This is similarly, talks about a disappearance of a child that is in the care that social services are involved with, and Sarah Lancashire is the star of it, and she plays a woman working for the social services. And it's all about what happens when the child disappears, and it's so incredibly tense and
great role for
realistic.
Lancashire. She does this.
Lancashire, the greatest from Happy Valley. This is another career-defining role for Lancashire, but I'm not allowed to say much more because it's embargoed.
It's nothing better than she does like a distressing drama.
Yeah, totally. So that's incredible, and that's early next year. Also early next year, which I don't think is embargoed, actually. I went to see Britannia the other night with David Morrissey. And it's the big new Sky Atlantic. We'll review it for when it arrives. Mm-hmm. Epic, set in ancient Roman times in like 52 BC or something. All about what happens when the Romans invade Britain and they're faced with druids, who are crazy, crazy mofo druids, and others, and other tribal people. And it's kind of like Game of Thrones without the dragons set back then, but even more intense and weird. And it's written by Jez Butterworth, who's the playwright, who... who's written loads of amazing plays, and he co-wrote a lot of the recent James Bond films that Sam Mendes directed.
That sounds fantastic.
And Sam Mendes introduced the whole thing because it's his production company. So I see Sam Mendes standing there on the stage at BAFTA, Mr. Recent James Bond. I tried to tap him to see if he was going to do a third, but I didn't. I didn't have to. No, I couldn't.
Well, you didn't ask him, or you didn't give an answer?
I didn't ask him.
Did you put your hand up?
No, I just.
So how did you try and tap him? How?
Well, I kind of said hello to him.
He asked the question in his head.
I said hello and asked the question in my head. Thanks.
So you didn't try.
I got the sense that he wasn't directing the third one, the next one. Yeah.
You just got the sense.
I got the sense. Yeah, I think he's
felt
got
it in his waters.
Bigger fish to fry. Yeah. But that was very exciting. It's an incredibly exciting show, Britannia. Yeah. And I love David Morrissey. I interviewed David Morrissey for about another show, and he's one of the nicest men in thespianism.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't seen him for a while.
He's such a great man. He's always around.
Yeah,
he's got two big shows next year.
What's his other one?
Britannia and The City and the City, which is a big BBC Two drama adapted from a brilliant, brilliant novel by China Miéville, science fiction.
Oh, wow.
Speculative fiction, weird fiction,
dystopian.
The writer calls it. Kind of semi-dystopian, but don't hold that against him. Please, come on.
Oh my God,
it's not about bunny. It's not about the happy bunny. Come on. Imagine the happy bunny in the dystopia.
House bunny.
Anyway, before we all lose it completely, let's move on to the meat. It is hot in here. Kay's not talking about the kind of metaphorical heat.
It's
sweltering
in
this
office,
glass room.
It's very
I'm wearing
hot.
A turtleneck. What a dick.
Yeah, I've got thermals on.
What an idiot. Let's start with the Tunnel of Vengeance.
Oh, well, Boyd, some of us can start with Tunnel of Vengeance, but some of us can't.
Yeah. Luckily, you and I believe I are tunnel aficionados. And I'm going to hand over to you, Steph, because I know when you said to me sometime earlier this week, what the F are we doing in the podcast? And I said, oh, the tunnel. You went, oh, I love the tunnel. So why do you love the tunnel? What's happened so far? Take it away, Steph Seelan.
Okay, so if you have never watched The Tunnel before...
Where have you been?
Because The Tunnel is incredible. And this is the fourth one. This is the fourth series of the tunnel, isn't it?
I think it's the third.
Is
third.
It?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's the fourth. The bridge, which was the inspiration for the tunnel, the original Swedish Danish, that's on its fourth series coming up next year. This is only the third.
Okay, yeah. Well, if you haven't.
Oh, here, look, it says this is the third and final season.
One was body cut in half in the Channel Tunnel, two was plane crashing in the Channel. This is three.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no fourth.
Well, you should. I believe they're still available on Sky, actually. I think you can still watch the first two series. So please do, because what's really amazing about this series is the relationship between the two central characters, played by Clements Posey and Stephen, how do you say his name?
Delane,
I believe. Is that how?
Yeah,
Stephen Delane. So Clements Posey, who is just an amazing actress, isn't she? So she plays the detective on the French side and Stephen Delane plays the detective on the British side. And so their whole relationship started from the first series when there was a body with a head in one side in the middle of the Channel Tunnel and the body in the other side. So they had to come together to find out what had happened. Go back and watch those first two series because then you'll really understand the relationship. But in this one, okay, so they have to come back together. What's happened is at the beginning, there's a boat and there's some children on the boat and then there's a huge fire and we don't know what has happened to the children. But it's happened on the British side. So Stephen Delane comes in, swoops in and says, I'm going to find out, but he has to go over to France because it was a French boat, so it came from France. So they're brought back together to investigate what happens. Now, I'm not going to give anything away because
the less you give away, the better.
Less you give away,
there are rats, though, aren't there? There's a brilliant scene early on where someone else investigates the boat for various reasons. She goes, a huge swarm of rats.
How many?
Effing load of rats. Mm. Just to warn you, because people do have a fear of rats.
Yeah, they are CGI rats. They are CGI.
What did you check?
Because I freeze framed it at that because I thought there's no way. And they are CGI.
How do you know from freeze framing?
I mean,
you can just tell.
Yeah.
What, they all look the same?
No,
I wasn't being sarcastic.
No, they do.
Yeah.
Rat racist?
No, they are.
A ratist.
I don't think they're rat racist. I don't think that's a thing.
I mean,
a ratist.
No, they are.
Okay, CGI rats. But CGI rats. It's still
very
pretty
scary.
Horrific, isn't it?
It's really, really horrific. So if you don't like rats, don't look at that thing. You won't know when it's coming. No, you'll hear it because actually it's quite scary.
You will.
Anyway, so they're back together and they're going to investigate. We don't want to give too much away because
we can also say though, for fans of the relationship between Clements Posey and
Stephen Delane,
that her character I think is really fascinating because she's kind of on
the spectrum.
She's gone on the spectrum. She has very strange social activities, isn't she? She has no self censorship. So I think a lot of the kind of dark comedy throughout the first two series and going back to The Bridge, the brilliant origination of the whole thing, is that you get a lot of kind of comedy from her unintended...
Unfiltered.
Brusqueness. Brusque is a word,
isn't
it? Yeah,
brusque.
So there's a scene in this where they're meeting these poor parents whose children have been replaced
by it.
Yeah, and it's horrendous. And she's like, you should have been more careful. And,
it's like an extraordinary moment.
There's moments like that. And and she's kind of demoted herself, isn't she? That's intriguing. So she's a high.
She holds herself. She basically
high-flying detective in the first series, but she demotes herself to a more menial role because she's furious with herself about what happened at the end of the last series.
And she only eats chips and French sticks.
And she's quite promiscuous.
And she sleeps with everyone.
Interesting. Yes.
She's my hero.
Yeah.
So, quick question: is the relationship? Is it romantic?
No.
No. And
lies the beauty of the whole thing.
Yeah. They are, so Detective Roebuck, who is his Stephen Delane's character, and Elisa Wasserman, that he is basically her best friend in the world. He kind of understands her on a level,
because they've worked on so many cases together.
But there is nothing romantic. There is never any hint of anything romantic at all going
and that's
on.
The kind They're of glory. Yeah. It's a celebration in some ways, the whole thing, isn't it, of their friendship and their professional, the way they work together. And that the whole thing is down to how brilliant they are together.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people...
That was a bit like Strike, wasn't it? Do they ever get together?
Strike.
You know Strike?
Oh, yeah, Strike. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, it is similar. Yeah, and I think probably, I'm totally speaking on behalf of J.K. Rowling here, but I think she'd probably admit maybe to have some inspiration from maybe the original Bridge... And this kind of thing, because there are a lot of similarities between the mismatched male and female leads who aren't romantically intertwined at all. And they are so brilliant together on screen. And yeah. I thought I think the dialogue in this is so good between them, isn't it? There's a brilliant bit where our post-rat scene, he's explaining, he's saying, oh, there's loads of rats. And he's like, rats? That's like that James Herbert book. And she says, what? And there was a very famous, remember the very famous James Herbert book, Rats, that all, especially boys, grew up and read, which is a perverse mix of sex and horror. And he says that to her. He explains. And I'm like, this is so brilliant. In the middle of this whole kind of tense detective drama, there's time for him to talk about this very famous novel that is pretty grim. And there's lots of funny, great funny scenes like that, and they're just so brilliant together. I think it's just
it's all about their relationship. It's all about their relationship. But the investigations, if you go back and watch the first two series, the investigations, it's so you cannot guess what's going to happen, can you? Would you say that's fair, boy?
I think it's also fair to say, as much as I would agree with you to encourage you to watch the first series, you can jump into this one as well. Because you'll get the hang of it.
You're just saying you'll get even more pleasure.
Yeah, of course.
You will absolutely get more pleasure because also,
she's really. Steph was about to say my name there.
I was going to say, Boyd, but she's really annoyed with him. You shouldn't encourage people. But I think get to know these characters. Yeah.
But so good is the story. So good is the script writing.
It's that standalone.
I think you immediately know what they're like from jumping in. It's years since I watched, the first two.
I know, but when you go watch something and hasn't been on for a while and you go, oh, I'm so happy to see these two back together because I'm so invested in them.
Yeah.
I just want everyone to experience
Pogs,
that.
Do it one way or the other. Just
but
watch it on its own.
Before Kay wraps us up, because I know she's particularly wants to move on because she hasn't seen this and so she's even more impatient than usual.
Talk about
I want to mention some of the new cast members.
Oh, we have to.
We've got to mention Felicity Montague. Yes, Lynn from Alan Partridge
Lynn.
Is in it as the new boss, who's brilliant, brilliantly uncomfortable. William Ash plays B.B. Borofsky, who's the hot new junior detective in the team. And Sharon Rooney from My Mad Fat Diary is in there. We don't quite know how she fits in yet, but she's in there with a dodgy fiancé, isn't she?
Yeah.
It is.
It's a really good. It's going to
really
be great.
Good. It's going to be great. It's one of Sky Atlantic's best things, I think.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm really sad.
Except for Tin Star,
be their final. It's so different.
One
and
of.
Also, actually, I don't know, Tin Star... Last week I fell out with it.
One of.
Yeah.
Just, you fell out with it after you'd
last
seen
it. Last week you fell out with it.
Last pod.
You saw it ages ago.
No, because do you remember it was sponsoring our sister pod?
Oh.
And I was like, well, that's a fallout.
I don't think you can fall out with a show after you've seen it and given it a review.
Because I told you that our sister pod Empire had been...
You know how I hold a grudge.
That's like
what?
Your... That's She's the equivalent of Steph's...
No, I've still...
Groundbreaking ludicrousness with Ricky Whittle.
I knew somehow this was going to come back on me to be a criticism of me. I knew it.
Let's not talk.
It's not really...
Let's not fight.
Let's not talk over each other. Otherwise, the critic from The Observer will be annoyed.
Oh, we don't want that.
And listeners will be annoyed as well.
It's not really a grudge. I love
how many how many stars are we giving this bloody programme, The Tunnel, Vengeance?
4.5.
I concur.
Do you?
Yeah. Ooh. After a rocky early disagreement between you and me in this podcast, we've come together in joyous harmony.
Yeah, we go through so many emotions here.
The Tunnel Vengeance is on Sky Atlantic / Now TV from next Thursday, the 14th of December at 9 p.m. And that very time, all 6 episodes are available to binge.
It's a binge.
On.
It's a binge. Kay, are you going to binge it?
Yeah.
No, she won't.
Kay, you'd like it.
No, I will. When does it plonk? Bringing that word back.
I just elaborately said when plonk. It's on and you ignored me.
No, because I wanted you to bring the word plonk back in.
Oh, sorry. It's plonking on the 14th. Next
and we just... Oh, so we decided it's a kaplonk.
No, it's a in plonk.
Anyway.
Right.
Sorry,
Zip it.
Boyd.
In a semi-binge situation, ITV is scheduling across 4 nights consecutively from next Monday at their new crime drama series, The Bancroft, starring none other than Sarah Parrish as WPC Elizabeth Bancroft, hence the title. It's quite complicated, Kay, and I was thinking of turning to you to explain this plot.
It's really
Is that okay?
I'll give it a bash and you can chip in.
Okay.
Yeah?
Because, just quickly say, you said why they're stripping across the week. I think maybe because it's so complex with different time zones and different interlocking mysteries, they want to allow people to semi-binge on it all in one go, 4 nights in a row. Carry
it's
on,
not
Kay.
A relic, though. It's
yeah,
not like
no,
relic.
It's not
I
a relic.
Was literally just about to say, is it that complex?
Oh, okay, maybe it's not
I don't think
no,
it is. It's
on.
Not. It's no relic.
Let's you explain it to prove it's not that complex.
Okay.
Prove it. Prove it.
Okay, Sarah Parrish plays WPC. Oh, right. No, she plays Elizabeth Bancroft. So, basically, there was a case that is now 27 years old or something. Happened in 1990 of a woman called Laura Fraser, and she's in her early 20s. She was walking along to her home, quite dark, late at night. And then a worried neighbour calls the police because she isn't answering her door. And we see this WPC, Elizabeth Bancroft, so obviously this is when she was more junior, looking through the letterbox and seeing Laura Fisher and bloody, like lying on the floor. She's been battered and looking bloody and So obviously that's one crime that is in the programme.
She's dead.
She's dead.
Yeah, I think we can safely say she's dead.
Not a spoiler,
she's
dead.
She's bloody and dead.
Yeah,
she's bloody dead. And then flash forward.
Sorry.
2017, and Elizabeth Bancroft has progressed in her career, and now she is basically focused on an operation to bring down this, like, really kind of aggressive, violent gang led by two brothers. One is called Atif and the other is called Danish. Now, you don't say it like that, do you? Dinesh. Dinesh. And so she's running this operation to kind of bring them down. That all kind of unravels in the first episode. It's all very, like, dramatic. But in tandem to this, there's a young upstart. Well, she's very ambitious. D.S. Catherine Stevens, played by Faye Marseille. And she's been put on cold cases because she's, like, really eager to get involved in the action. And she's been told, no, you just focus on these cold cases, one of which is this Laura Fraser case. What we slowly realise is that Sarah Parrish's character is somehow connected to this case because Sarah Parrish looks very uncomfortable every time she talks about it. She's trying to get her off this cold case, and that's as much as I'm going
to
say. Yeah.
There's some flashbacks that allow you to see that she was involved in that case earlier on in her career.
Yeah.
Bancroft. So that's not a spoiler, is it?
No, because she looks through the letterbox.
Yeah.
It's
the premise, not spoiler. Yeah.
Oh, your favourite phrase.
So the premise is, so it's kind of like there's this case that involving Sarah Parrish's character when she was young. Mysterious thing that the cold case new woman, Faye Marseille, is investigating. I'm just kind of, you know.
I know.
I'm semi-repeating, but I'm more like, I'm emphasising, for me, the
establishing.
Complex. When I said it was complicated, what I meant was trying to work out the the current case that that she's in charge of is quite complicated, with all these gangsters and brothers, isn't it? I mean, that's very complicated in itself. On top of that, you've got the investigation of what happened to her 20 years ago in this other case. So I'm saying,
it's a multi-layered, cross-time investigation.
I'm just trying to defend my use of the word complicated.
Okay. Well,
it's a dual case situation. And to explain why I think ITV is running out 4 nights in a row, which they are, in the build-up to Christmas.
But I feel like also, because it is very fast-paced, this thing, that actually doing it and it moves along. Well, if you watch the first episode, a lot is revealed in the first episode.
A lot.
So I feel like actually you want to keep up with that pace. So I think it's interesting they've done it over 4 nights because I immediately wanted to know what happened, but it was way past my bedtime at 12:15 last night for me to watch the next one. But I think
it's a good drama,
isn't
it? Yes. It's like it's very intriguing. You want to know what the hell her connection to this whole case is.
And you do find out at the end of this episode really what her connection is, and you will be gripped afterwards.
Yeah.
Well, completely, yeah. And it's kind of both cases, I think, are really interesting because you've got the characters you meet in the current case that she's investigating. And also, she's up for being promoted, and that's interesting as well. There's lots of kind of politics. Adrian Edmondson's in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
As her rival in the promotion thing. And he's really good. I think it's great seeing him in a very straight role as a kind of like wily old-timer cop. Who's kind of her boss still, but she's up for the same promotion that he is. That's quite interesting. And I think the cast is great because Faye Marseille is in another big Channel 4 drama coming out, a big one-off drama called Shamed, which she's brilliant in. She's a big, going to be a big star, I think. She was in Game of Thrones. I think she's really good in this as the kind of...
But she herself has got kind of an interesting background, hasn't she, in this? She's got there's another little story with her in. There's another whole plot with her situation.
Lots of subplots.
Right, see what I'm saying? See, complicated.
Subplot-tastic.
Lots of subplots, lots of threads running. Yeah, there's kind of like inappropriate or appropriate relationships, stuff going
on.
It's
a tapestry.
It's a glorious tapestry. Mm. Kay, did you like that tapestry, or is it a kind of tapestry you chuck in the bin?
Who would chuck tapestry in the bin?
A lot of work goes into a tapestry.
You
of course
would.
You would.
You don't even like musicals. Let's not go there.
I definitely...
What's the connection between musicals and tapestry?
Just because I feel like the not liking musicals just the irks crafts. Me and I like to bring it up every so often.
Okay, I'm sorry for that ridiculous interruption. Carry on.
Yes, I did really enjoy it and I will be watching all 4 episodes and I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Straight in there with the star rating. You know what that means.
Brief and to the point.
Move on.
Yeah, move on.
We either carry on and I expire from this heat or...
Okay.
We can't let the temperature
dictate.
Dictate.
The review.
Right,
I thought when you wanted my verdict, you also wanted my star rating.
Do you want me to
go back to the beginning of my analysis?
Can you do that. All I want to know is it complicated? That's what I want to know.
I didn't find it particularly complicated.
Taking a pee.
Steph,
easily comprehended, Steph. How many stars would you give? What did you think? And how many stars would you give Bancroft?
I loved it. I thought Sarah Parrish... I like to see Sarah Parrish in this kind of role.
Saz-paz.
Yeah.
Say something about Sarah, actually.
Now she wants to say something. Yeah, you finished. It was a wrap-up from you.
You have finished. But we will return.
We'll allow it.
Go on.
We'll allow it.
I just felt like, and I don't know if it's because they had a lot to squeeze in, like as you said, it's very fast-paced, they got a lot in. Her, you know, the kind of fact that she is connected to this.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, I didn't feel like there's any layers like to you discovering that she just very, do you know what I mean? It was all there.
What do you mean?
As in like, I don't know, I just feel...
Are you going to spoil it? Don't spoil it.
No, it's just very...
You think it's too obvious?
I think it was too obvious.
Oh, well...
Oh, but I don't think... I agree. It's very obvious, but I think...
And the way she played it was
quite obvious. The nitty-gritty is going to come from the next episode. It is obvious. They need to make it obvious in the first episode because the real interesting thing is going to be what happens next. This is not going to help anyone who doesn't have any idea what we're talking about, but you will understand why so much is revealed in the first episode. I thought Sarah Parrish was great. I think she has... excellent facial expressions, and she made me feel incredibly tense. I think it's hard to do. But I know that's ridiculous, boy.
No, it's not ridiculous.
But I think it is hard to have an array of facial expressions in a drama like this.
It's what acting's all about. I mean,
so some people say, but some people say it's about the words, Boyd. And I think she didn't. She didn't have that many lines.
Didn't she?
Just saying. It was a lot about her serious.
I mean,
like,
I don't think this is
looks.
Worth sweating over. Let's not sweat it. Mm. Small stuff.
Okay. Yeah,
I could go on about this all day, but because Kay's getting sweaty.
Do you think this is going to be the first of like? Is Bancroft? I don't think. Do you think it will? Well, it depends.
Are you asking? Am I right in thinking what you're asking is? Do you think this could be a recurring, ongoing series?
Is it going to be like Taggart?
I think it could. Although, it all depends what happens in the end, doesn't
it? That's what I
mean. Which we don't know because we haven't watched all four. I feel like they're setting up. It would be pretty incredible to set up a series with Parrish as a detective and not. Have it as a possibility, at least, that will return, isn't it?
It's got a whiff of Line of Duty about it for me.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I thought it was really good. I mean, it's no Line of Duty. Line of Duty is...
Oh, no, it's no Line of Duty. That's why I said a whiff.
It's got a whiff. And I thought... But Parrish is great. And because I love her in W1A, she's hysterically funny in W1A, you know,
she's multifaceted, isn't she, this woman?
Every now and then in this, when she had moments of being uptight, you know, when she was getting a bit annoyed, and the cold case is being, I was thinking, W1A, Anna Rampton.
But that's the danger of when you're in an amazing comedy,
I know.
And then you go and do a serious drama.
Right, but then she's so good. No, the end of that sentence is, she's so good that I forgot about W1A in the end.
Okay, it's a bit like when John Bishop was in that drama.
Yeah,
I'm
except
just
unlike you,
saying.
I'm not discounting Sarah Parrish from being in anything else, unlike you discounting poor John Bishop from being in something. I'm giving it 4 stars.
I'm going to give it 4.5. I really liked it.
Is Kay
I think Cogs are going to love it. Yeah, she whispered to Jan a minute ago, can I just have
me.
A little bit more?
I mean, it's all very well complaining about the temperature in here, but if you can have more cake, then that's not going to help, is it?
It's sustenance to get me through this.
So Bancroft is on, as I believe we mentioned, stripped across the week from Monday, the 11th of December, through to Thursday, the 14th at 9 p.m.
Watch it, Pogs. You're going to like it. You are.
Finally, on Netflix now. So it's not even have to look forward to it. You can crank up Netflix now.
When is it on? Now. It's on now.
It's streaming now as we speak. It's called Voyeur. It's a one-off. I'm going to explain what this is about because I read a couple of years ago in The New Yorker, the best magazine in the world, Steph, this article that this whole film...
You read the article.
I mentioned it to Kay. I recommend it to Kay. She'll confirm.
I was not worthy of a recommend.
I think you were on holiday at the time.
Oh, of course. Cool, so safe bet.
Just
eat your cake.
It's called Voyeur. And it's all about... So this article that was in The New Yorker a couple of years ago was by legendary journalist Gay Talese. Yes, that is his name.
Yep.
Extraordinary name, Gay Talese. He's 84 years old. He's a giant of modern journalism. He wrote, among other things, a very famous book in America all about the sexual mores, the sexual activity of Americans.
Thy neighbor's wife, was
That's
it?
That's right, yeah. And he even went as far as living in a naturist community at one point, much to the chagrin of his wife.
Yeah, and living in a naturist community and sleeping with other people,
indeed.
So he could get to the
immersive
bottom of it.
Immersive
journalism. He's very he's a very famous kind of observational journalist who writes lengthy, you know, sometimes book-length pieces on society. And he, for many years, had been approached by a Colorado motel owner called Gerard Fuse, another weird name, Gay Talese and Gerard Fuse. They are strange names. I mean, I'm called Boyd. I'm not saying I'm not weirdly named. I feel I'm entitled to say when names are weird
or
not.
Who are you named after?
A little bit Stephen Boyd, who was in Ben-Hur in 1959. Yeah,
Boyd's
a
great name.
Thanks.
What are you talking about?
It's a bit weird.
Do you know anyone else called Boyd?
There's another Boyd
Hilton.
There's
a historian called Boyd Hilton. If you wiki on Wikipedia, it's got my picture and his age. It's like 84 or something.
I mean, I'm nearly 84. Someone else being called Boyd Hilton.
I know. Oh. It's extraordinary. But he's like, that's his middle name officially. I think he's like something like Harold Boyd Hilton.
Oh,
really.
Well, he should change it.
But he calls himself Boyd. Anyway, let's not get distracted by that. So Gerald Foos, this Colorado motel owner, told Gay Talese, the journalist, years ago of that, he had bought this motel and he had turned it into his kind of own plaything. And he created a kind of tunnel system above all the rooms in the hotel where he could observe what was going on in the people's private lives that were staying there. And, of course, mostly their sex lives. He would observe the sexual activity between all these people in the motel he owned. And he would not only that, he would write it all down.
Yay.
So he wrote reams and reams of notebooks.
Fastidious
accounts of all of these people, you know, white male, 52 with young female, blah, 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 and would describe what they get up to.
He was a real dirty Gertie.
And finally, he was kind of now, a couple of years ago, ready, if you like, for Gay Talese to tell his story as he did in this article and name him. Because for Gay Talese, one of his big things was, like, you know, he's got to be open and name the person. Otherwise,
I agree with him.
Fictional and meaningless. Yeah. Anyone could say this happened to them. But he convinced Gerald Foos, yeah, all right, let's name it. Wrote the article, extraordinary scenes. They come along and film this documentary about kind of the process by which Gay Talese got the guy to admit that he'd done all this, and their relationship, and the relationship of the guy and his wife. And not only that, Gay Talese is writing a book in the middle of this film that's going to explore the whole thing in even more detail. And that book actually comes out as the film is being filmed and processed. But then there's all kinds of twists and turns, aren't there, Stephen Kay, as well? So it's not just about this extraordinary story of this, frankly, pervy, is one word for it,
he's
motel
a pervert.
Owner.
There's no other word
for it. Voyeuristic motel owner. It's also about the process by which this famous journalist gets him to admit it all, and then it's about, is it all really true, isn't it? And then it's all about, what do you do with that if it's not all true?
The key thing is that in uncovering all of this information about all the things that he's seen, it comes to light that one of the things that old Gerard says he's seen when he was up in the roof peering down on everyone is that he says he saw a murder, okay? And I don't want to give away the whole reason why he is actually involved and might possibly be to blame for this person who did actually die, because you want to watch it. It's very interesting. But obviously there are implications if he saw it, didn't report it. And so that's one of the major sticking points of whether everything that he's saying is called into question, whether it is or is not true.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any doubt that he, like, as I asked you, I say again, he is a dirty Gertie. He was just a bit of a perv. Who builds a tunnel in their roof? And he looked down all these air shafts to just look at all these people. And sometimes he would just look at people eating chicken McNuggets.
Yeah,
I mean,
KFC.
Yeah, and
actually, ironically, that's the one time he nearly got caught.
Yeah.
Was his anger at someone eating KFC, lots of light chicken, and then wiping their greasy hands on the bedspread, and he kind of muttered a profanity and the guy heard. Yeah. And that's the only time that he's nearly been caught.
But we should say that also Gay Talese, one of the reasons that Gay Talese is so kind of enamoured with this source and believes what he says is because he actually at one point took Gay Talese up into this loft and they had an old look themselves. And Gay Talese was witness to a sexual act being performed. And he was looking through the vent, obviously rather intently, because he didn't notice that his tie was dangling down, nearly touching the intimate places of said couple.
This guy is just like he says he's
Foos.
Says he's a he's a researcher, but he is a pervert, and Gay is just enabling him, and he's
is he?
Okay. Well, as in like, well, not enabling actually, but he's not bringing this morally questioned, dubious man. He's not doing anything about it. He's been aware of
it. What did you want him to do about it?
Well, I think he had a moral responsibility to, like, alert someone.
Yeah.
Like, not just, like, spend 20 years documenting it.
No. But if you're a journalist, this is one of the fundamentals of journalism. If someone approaches you with a story, they are the source of that story. You can't shop them then to... If you as soon as you go, oh, right, I'm interested in this story, to tell the story, you can't then shop them to the police. I mean, it's not how it works. It's the opposite. You've got to...
Yeah, but when you know something's so morally wrong... So if a journalist is... Suppose a journalist is told about... Oh, no, it's actually maybe it's a bit inappropriate. But, like, suppose someone who's abusing someone went to a journalist...
That's different.
Yeah, that's different. It's true. No, but you're... That's surely they have a moral obligation. Well,
the question is voyeurism a crime? That's the real question.
Yeah, well,
is it a crime?
No, I think
there are ambiguities there, isn't it? Because he owned I think there are legal ambiguities there because he owned the motel.
Yeah,
you know,
it wasn't as if he was sitting. He hadn't broken into any. No. Really, I actually think legally what it is, and please correct me.
I mean, that's true.
I think it is. If you break into somebody's and then you're somebody, then they actually get them on breaking and entering rather than actually staring at people.
It's definitely
it becomes stalking, doesn't it? I actually think if people are in an establishment that you own and you choose to sit in a room and look at them in whatever way, because if you think about it now,
about all the murder, suppose that did happen.
No. I totally agree with you that. But if you think about any hotels that you're in at the moment, they've all got CCTV. Somebody's watching you anyway at all times.
Yeah, but not in your bedroom watching you have sex.
I don't know. I cannot.
You've got cameras in your house, haven't you? Where
I
you look at the dogs.
I've got cameras in my house where I look at my dogs and make sure that Liam's taken them out and given them a shower. You know, those dogs have yet to bring charges against me about them and their private time.
Yeah, but anyway, that's one of the moral questions. There are definitely moral questions. I mean, I don't think they're illegal. I don't think gay to these is any legal issue.
You know, I didn't say he had. He should have morally done something.
Because you think that the people people should not be spied on if they go into a hotel and they think they have an expectation of privacy.
I think we're all agreed on that. But legally, it's a grey area. But what I'm saying is that this film, a stand back from the issue of whether or not gay should be involved, it's an incredibly... I mean, I was excited about it because I read that article, but there's so much more to it than that because it winds up being... And I'm trying not to spoil it, but I don't think it is spoiling it to say that it winds up being an incredibly tense kind of relationship between Gay Talese and the guy.
Absolutely.
Which you see played out with the filmmakers involved as well, to the point where there's a scene late on where they're confronting each other and the filmmakers are watching it and Gay Talese has a go at the filmmakers. Yeah. I'm like, I'll leave them out. It's not their fault.
It's kind of like a standoff.
Yeah, it's gripping, isn't it?
This is a film about the relationship between a journalist and his source. That is what this is essentially a film about. You get to a point where the voyeurism is kind of... Yeah, I agree with you, Kate. He's obviously got issues. He's a bit crazy.
His own wife is at one point, isn't it? He says, we meet his wife in there all the way through.
She says, you are a peeping Tom, you are a dirty old man.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think, no, it's just like, I think it's just a bit morally ambiguous, isn't it? Because towards the end, his focus is just the article and the book. All he's going... They're both... I don't know, I think they've both got gold complexes.
I would also agree with you, but I do think one of the frustrating things about this is that I don't think... This documentary is... I didn't feel like it came to any real conclusion about some of the questions that were raised because you don't... I really want to know... I wanted kind of a definitive... Was this all made up? I wanted somebody to... Because they kind of...
It wasn't all made up, no.
No, obviously not all, but were the major points that he was talking about, like the murder and everything like that?
I think sometimes there are no definitive answers, that's all I'll say.
To murder, whether a murder happened?
There are no...
You don't think there's a definitive answer to whether he did witness a murder or not? What? I mean, I feel like that there should be. Did you witness a murder or not? I mean, this is a grey area. Well, you either did or
did
you once, didn't.
Did someone die in that hotel or not?
Because that's really interesting. Yeah. Why on earth, if you didn't witness that, would you go along with saying that you did?
Yeah, but I'm not being funny. Why would someone perv on people having sex?
I think we've just got to say he's a weirdo.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the same kind of person you might
lie
about murder.
One of the whole themes of it is how the guy, the voyeur, gets off on people knowing about him, and then as a lot of criminals do as well. Being famous and being and Gay Talese is saying all the way through this guy is not getting off on is probably the wrong word. He's enjoying the process of becoming famous, and then it all goes too far when everyone does know who he is.
But
and
also,
that's extraordinary.
But also this whole thing is about the fact that this guy is a voyeur, right? And he's saying that he basically watches people, and Gay Talese is also a voyeur,
and
that is the other point. These two men are actually both voyeurs, but one of them is kind of a legitimised voyeur who is just hugely interested in other people's lives. But come on, this is a journalist, and he's a fascinating creature in himself that will go thinks that he has to be so in the story that he's in a family unit, but yet will go and live in a nudist camp and have sex with other people. much as you, I know I'm repeating what you said, but much to the horror of his wife. And he's also so interested. It's fascinating to see the inside of Gay Talese's apartment. I mean, he's a very snappy dresser. And he's got all of these boxes full of files. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. He is a voyeur. They are two. They are kind of cut from the same cloth, but they've ended up in very different worlds.
One of the funniest things for me is the fact what they actually ultimately fall out about.
Yeah, the stamps.
Yeah, the baseball cards.
Yeah. Oh, baseball cards.
Of everything that happens, the thing that pisses off.
His collection. Yeah,
yeah, the guy who raised food. Yeah, is that, yeah. His baseball cards. Yeah. Got it's documented.
I think you can't get away from the fact that these are two fascinating human beings. Yeah. Whatever you think of anything else, just to have an insight and just even just to look into these people's homes is just absolutely fascinating.
I think it's safe to say, because since, you know, we're having heated discussions about all the different
moral
implications of this. True, and that whether it's some of it's true or not, and all of this, it's an extraordinarily rich, dense thing, isn't it? And I don't think what I was going to go on and say finally in answer to your did it happen or didn't it happen, like the murder, and is it all real? I came away with it thinking, in the end, even though the guy got stuff wrong, you know, and that I'm trying not to ruin the ending, if you like, with some of the revelations that happened late on, I still felt that I believed pretty much. All of you said fundamentally, but the one question is over the crime, the murder crime, yeah.
Yeah, I would like to know whether that did happen.
Get in touch, Foose.
Yeah, ask him. But maybe he didn't want to... The other thing is maybe he didn't want to implicate himself, and that there are legal issues about that, clearly.
But also, no, the reason he... Well, actually, they cover that off really early because actually the Statute of Limitations had passed, and that's why he said, it now because the Statute of Limitations had passed.
Okay. No, they said they thought as far as they were aware...
That's what I was saying.
They had,
I think it's like 20 years and it had been that. Anyway.
Loads of debate. You will. If you watch this documentary, which is what, 90, 100 minutes? You're going to be thinking about it, I think, for days and
talking
about it.
I think it's like,
it.
Yeah, it's like 84
If you watch
minutes.
It, Pogs, can you get in touch? And if you think he should have raised the alarm a bit sooner than he did, that would be great.
Gay Talese. You're really blaming Gay for this.
No, I'm not blaming him, but I'm just saying to... Oh, anyway, let's not get into it.
It's happened now.
Blame Gay, blame Gay.
There's nothing we can do now.
Don't blame Gay, don't blame Gay. Don't Gay blame.
Kay does not blame Gay.
Kay and Gay together, last. That would be amazing. Let's get Gay over for a Kay tête-à-tête.
I'm going to move you on. Stop it now.
I'm enjoying the Gay Kay rhyming too much.
Stop it now.
Okay. Five stars from me. Voyeur, it's on the Netflix.
A morally questionable five stars from everybody.
Finally.
It is.
That time.
Question time.
I wrote best ever crime dramas because we're doing two crime dramas this week. But have we discussed that before? I can't remember. I don't think we have.
I'm getting straight out of the traps and just saying Line of Duty has to be, surely.
Doesn't
it? Don't call me Shirley.
So difficult.
Sorry.
Oh, boy.
It's an oldie but goodie.
It's a good one. Yeah, she's taking Line of Duty. Steph, what are you going to do? Are you going to fight back?
It's either that or Poirot, and I thought I couldn't bring him up again.
Oh, please, gosh, no.
I was talking about Poirot last night to someone. I can't remember who it was. Anyway, carry on.
That's an interesting
Who said
interlude.
The best Poirot? I meant to mention, remember who it was because I was saying the best Poirot is your favourite.
David Suchet. Yeah. There's only one.
Mm-hmm. Carry on.
Crime drama. Oh, how are you defining crime drama?
I think a
drama where crime occurs.
Yeah, but so I mean, is it
you
like
asked
a,
for that.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean?
Because I think it has to have crime, detectives, victims, you know, anything. Yeah, it can be anything, including those elements.
The news.
What are you thinking of?
Well, I feel like not enough people watch Damages, Glenn Close Damages, and that's one of my favourite all-time crime dramas.
Fine. Yeah, I think we called that a legal drama at the time.
That's okay, so there you go. Is it a legal drama?
I might ask you for another one.
But crime happens all the time, isn't it?
True. I think it's possibly, yeah. Possibly.
I think for the sake of brevity, let's accept it.
Yeah, true.
Okay. Damages. It's a good answer.
Or Law and Order, every single Law and Order that's ever been on. But I'm actually going to say one more thing. The greatest crime drama of all time, of course, is...
Oh, I know.
No! You don't know. Yes, you do.
Oh, my
Murder,
God.
She Wrote. The greatest crime drama of all time.
Okay. I'm thinking of The Singing Detective, which was a legendary Dennis Potter thing back in the 80s on BBC One that was kind of so much more than being a crime drama, but it played on crime drama and it played on film noir.
Okay.
And it's one of the greatest things of all time. It's been sweaty because we're in the hottest room in
morally questionable.
The world. Morally questionable. Factually questionable, I think, in many ways. And thank you so much for your glorious contributions. It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
And it is a goodbye from me.
Oh, and we should say, so our next pod...
Bring it back. Woo.
...is maybe slightly late on next Tuesday. But you know why?
Why?
Why? What are you doing? Something exciting.
Well, yeah. I'm going to see Star Wars. The Last Jedi. And I feel the global embargo breaks at 5 o'clock the next day, Tuesday, the day
you're going to ignore
pod comes
that.
Out, and I think we're going we're going to ignore that and review the Brown Bunny.
Yeah.
No,
House Bunny.
No, it was a film called Brown Bunny.
Oh.
So look it up.
Okay.
And yeah, so we're going to delay the arrival of the pod next Tuesday, including at least my review of as if anyone cares, The Last Jedi.
Everyone cares. Everyone loves you.
And I'm sure the pogs will forgive our tardiness.
Exactly, and all the other stuff that we'll be doing as well. So see you then.
But should we say, if they want to rate and review us?
Rate and review, please.
Rate and review.
Nicely.
Nicely. Be kind.
This will go down as
don't say anything.
The pod that never ends.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.